The idea of creating a new national park in Maine's North Woods has a new leader, Roxanne Quimby's son, Lucas St. Clair. It has been more than 40 years since the National Park Service created a new national park. Roxanne Quimby dreams of changing that. She wants to donate tens of thousands of acres of Maine wilderness to create a national park in Maine's North Woods. For years, opinions about the potential park have been sharply divided and marked by distrust, both of Quimby and of the federal government. But now, Quimby has stepped back from the conversation, and in her place is her son, Lucas St. Clair, who is working to bridge those gaps and build support for the park idea in a different way. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll meet St. Clair and one of those he is trying to convince, Master Guide Don Kleiner. Maine Calling is next, but first the news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Plans for a national park in Maine date back more than a decade, when Roxanne Quimby started buying up tens of thousands of acres of land and announced plans to donate that land to the National Park Service. Many people in the area worry about the future of hunting and recreational use on that land. Others think it's a great idea. Today, we have Roxanne Quimby's son, Lucas St. Clair, on the program to talk about his efforts to answer questions and concerns about the park proposal. Lucas is now president of the board of Elliottsville Plantation Incorporated, the company that oversees Roxanne Quimby's lands in Maine. We also have Don Kleiner. He is a master Maine guide and former executive director of the Maine Professional Guides Association, and he's received several awards for his work. We would like your thoughts on this issue. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And welcome to both of you here on Maine Calling today. Lucas, why don't I start with you? Tell me about your decision to move back to Maine and become involved in the effort to create a national park here.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on, first of all. And about 2 years ago, I began working for the foundation. I've been on the board since it was created. And living in Washington State, I lived out there for about 8 years, worked as a fishing guide, and started working for the foundation, traveling back to Maine, and it just became a logistical problem coming back to Maine every 2 weeks or so. Just became exhausting, and finally convinced my wife and young daughter to come back and work full time for the foundation.
Okay, but why now are you the face of this effort? Was there a strategic decision, or do you have you just decided this is where your passion is? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Why did you make this change in your life?
Well, it is my passion. I grew up in northern Maine, and I spent my childhood recreating on this land, and it really means a lot to me. And I saw that I potentially could help move the ball forward. I have had a different perspective on how land could be put into the public hands and potentially help work on creating a national park and a national recreation area in a different way. And thought that, you know, I had something to add to the conversation, and potentially could be a person that brought folks together and brought stakeholders and interest groups in the region together to think strategically about this.
You said your perspective is different. Is that because you do hunt and fish, unlike your mom?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You know, I grew up in the outdoors. My father was a dedicated sportsman, still is. My grandfather was, and that was the sort of the way I was brought up. And so I have a different relationship to the resource, and I think that my relationship to the resource is more in line with what the community in the Katahdin region says.
Okay. Well, Don, how has Maine's outdoor community, if you will, responded to Lucas's involvement?
Well, at this point, I think it's fair to say, what is the problem we're solving here? We've wound up at this point where we have the North Woods that's been privately owned basically since this became a country, and it still exists in almost a park-like form where the people of Maine are able to recreate and use that land. And oh, by the way, it supports an important industry in the state at the same time.
Okay, but what about Luke? You told me before you came in that you and Lucas know each other.
We know each other. We even like each other. We just disagree.
Right.
Again, I speak sort of for a board here, even though you made me the former executive director of the Guides Association.
Was that incorrect?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I got promoted while I was driving down here.
I meant one
always hopes in these situations.
And are you?
I was when I left the house.
Okay, great. And I apologize for that.
It's quite all right. Don't apologize. We are not convinced that giving some portion of the state of Maine to the federal government will improve anything. And I think that's kind of where we're stuck is we already have a significant park right next to this parcel that we're discussing. I think it's the largest state park in the East. Is that true?
I think it is, yeah.
And if a park of that size is currently not generating any a significant economic benefit, why will a bigger, more different, you know, more special park do any more than that? But where is the gain?
Well, Lucas, you're nodding. I know you've probably been asked this over and over again. Why not a state park? Why not some other kind of private reserve? Why does this have to be, in your mind, a national park?
Well, I think beyond just the interest of sportsmen, there's a real challenge going on in the Katahdin region right now. There's been a massive recalibration of the community having to go from one industry that is that now they need multiple industries, and tourism is something they really need to capitalize on. And despite the fact that Baxter is a great, beautiful resource, its mandate is to be a wilderness area. They get about 80,000 visitors a year, and that's by design. They have strict caps on how many people can come and visit. And because of that and because of the type of user that comes there, they don't get a large economic benefit from it. Most of the folks that use Baxter State Park are hikers. Their boots are broken in. Their backpacks are packed when they leave the house, and they drive through the Katahdin region into Baxter and then spend a couple days there. When they're done recreating, they head back. National parks are very different. First, the brand itself is internationally recognized. It's a gold standard in conservation. 20 million visitors annually from Europe alone come to the United States to visit our national parks. And they're really the crown jewels of our nation. And so people flock to them in a way that's completely different than state parks. Acadia is a great example of that.
But that brings with it I appreciate that. I understand what Lucas is saying, but there's a downside to that as well. Acadia National Park was recently closed at the height of the tourism season in Bar Harbor. No one in Maine could impact that decision. Access to water bodies that the people of the state of Maine have a right to visit was shut off. Again, not through anything that we had any chance to impact. So I come back to, where is the benefit that exceeds that downside in giving any portion, one inch of the state of Maine, to the federal government?
Lucas, I know that there are some national parks that allow some hunting and fishing. Is this something that you would advocate for in the creation of a Northwoods National Park or whatever it's called?
It is. There are 90 units in the 401 park units that allow hunting, and our objective and sort of the ideas that we're getting closer to putting into a more formal proposal are creating a national park and a national recreation area. And a national recreation area allows more consumptive uses like snowmobiling, hunting, and ATV use. And so the community in the Katahdin region have really made it clear that the cultural heritage relies on those traditional uses and they need to be part of this plan. So that's the way we're thinking about setting it up, is having sort of two units, one where it would be more of a traditional unit like Acadia and one where hunting and snowmobiling and ATVing would be allowed. And to Don's point, it is frustrating when parks close, when the government is sort of in this challenging time. However, after those 16 days, the park reopened, and these aren't things that get sent offshore. It's not like the Great Northern Paper Mill that closed down in Millinocket that won't come back.
I'm sorry, Lucas.
No, go ahead.
The concessions in Acadia National Park were just given to a company from New Mexico.
Right.
Or taken away from a Maine company.
Yeah, that is true. Ortega did take over the concessions there. However, all the jobs that exist there will still be there. There's 10 jobs that were lost directly to that, but several hundred that'll still be in in place.
Now, John, let me ask you this. Is there any comfort in the idea that this park proposal sounds different than the park proposal we've been hearing about for the last several years?
To Lucas's credit, a couple things here. One is, I'm going to help you out here, Lucas. This is not the restore proposal that basically took the North Main Woods and made it into a park. It's not that. Also, to Lucas's credit, this discussion about the recreation area, I think he has been listening to the concerns of the people in the area. And I applauded him before, and I'll do it again. I think that's great. That's a whole different conversation than we've had in the last 5 or 6 years. I appreciate that and admire him for doing it.
And what about the point that he makes that the national parks are a brand and that I know people who it's one of their life goals to visit every national park. And the idea that we might bring some of those people to the Northwoods, do you not want more people up there? I mean, or would you like their dollar, their tourism dollar?
Absolutely. I mean, the tourism piece, that works for me. But also understand, I had visited with my wife 2 years ago Canyon de Chelly, which is a national monument in Arizona, not one of the more well-known, high-profile sort of places. And the town right at the entrance to Canyon de Chelly, I would say, is one of the poorest places I've ever been. Maine looks affluent compared to that. So the benefit, I'm a skeptic. Mark me down there. And I think that the Acadia concession example is a great one. We're going to keep all the T-shirt selling jobs, but the management, the money earning jobs just went somewhere else. That's not under our control. So that's another problem, I think, with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, and this is part of a broader discussion in Maine about the whole tourism industry, because often those service jobs are not high-paying jobs. Lucas, what do you envision? I mean, do you see a park in which there's a road leading up to it with T-shirt shops and hot dog stands?
I don't envision the T-shirt shops and hot dog stands. I think that one of the – we did a economic analysis of 16 counties around the country that are very similar to Penobscot County that have national parks and recreation areas in them. And three things were happening. Employment was growing, population was growing, and personal income was growing. But interestingly enough, personal income was growing faster than population. So not only are the people living in and around national parks and in other places making money, but they're getting wealthier. And a lot of that has to do with this sort of amenities migration, where around national parks, when there's an infrastructure like broadband internet and cell phone connectivity that is in place, people will move there because they're beautiful places and they can work virtually. A lot of people these days are working in the finance industry and design, architecture, engineering, that all they need is an internet connection and they want to be in a beautiful place. So a lot of folks are establishing those types of businesses around national parks, and that is happening in Acadia. And Jackson Lab is a great example of that.
Which brings a great kind of point here is the beautiful place is Baxter Park. This park proposed land basically looks at the beautiful place that the people of the state of Maine already have as a park.
People have said that, Lucas. People have said this is pretty, but it's not any prettier than a lot of Maine. Why is this national park worthy, this plot of land?
Well, I think that people say that, and I've been trying to convince Don to come up and take a tour with me for a while. But, they haven't been there. They haven't seen the real – the sort of majesty of the place. Baxter's amazing, and Mount Katahdin especially is one of the most beautiful places in the East. But the East Branch of the Penobscot is a breathtaking watershed. It's the headwaters of a river that drains three-quarters of Maine. The Wasatcook Stream is the most remote stream in the state and is unbelievably beautiful. And this expanse of trees, I mean, for people that have grown up in northern Maine are very accustomed to seeing a landscape that where all there is trees. And so I think in some ways may take that for granted. I've brought a lot of people up there from urban environments that can't believe a place like this actually exists on the map anymore. And I think it's sort of contextually, it's a really amazing place.
Okay. And for you, Don, I want to bring up the thought about you talked about distrust of the federal government and maybe not the sort of paranoid distrust that are from the fringe, but the looking at how can we trust them to keep this open, to manage it well, look at what happens in Acadia. But on the other hand, can we trust these international paper companies to perpetually allow the kind of access that we have enjoyed in Maine?
Well, Jennifer, at some level, I'm a proponent of dance with the girl that brung you. And we've gotten to this point with that management. I hear you. I share some of those concerns. But the reality is the ownership of that land base has changed in my career, short as it is. But we haven't seen that big of a change in management. There are management issues. I disagree with them on some stuff. The world's not perfect. But still, we haven't seen some giant turnover in the way that land is managed or is, for that matter.
Okay. Well, we are going to take another short break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. After this break, your comments and questions, please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Museum of African Culture, dedicated to education through art, music, storytelling, films, literature, and healing ceremonies. Brown Street, Portland. By Sweetser, seeking mentors for children with mental and behavioral health needs. Learn more at sweetser.org. And by VCharge Heat, providing sustainable thermal storage heating alternatives to oil, kerosene, or propane. More at goodcleanheat.com/MPBN.
For decades, the police, the FBI, and others in law enforcement have used interrogation techniques that some scientists and legal scholars say are based on outdated science and psychology and can produce false confessions. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Douglas Starr, who writes about interrogation techniques in the current edition of The New Yorker. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a smartphone, there are a couple of easy ways to take MPBN Radio along with you. For both Android and iPhones, there are two free smartphone apps which work well, the NPR News app and the TuneIn Radio app. Both allow you to easily find MPBN Radio and save it as a favorite. Find both the NPR News and TuneIn Radio app in the Android and iPhone app stores or marketplace, and again, they're both free. Enjoy MPBN Radio wherever and whenever you'd like.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the debate over a possible new national park in Maine. With me in the studio, Lucas St. Clair. He is president of the board of Elliottsville Plantation Incorporated, the company that oversees Roxanne Quimby's lands in Maine. We also have with us Don Kleiner. He's a master Maine guide and the executive director of the Professional Guide Association of Maine. We would like you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to Larry in Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. First, I'd like to say I'm 100% disabled vet and thus have a very hard time getting around in Baxter State Park. However, I'm very, very much against a national park. There are numerous reasons for this. Consider all the fires out west. The National Park Service was told to allow people to clear-cut more than they had been allowed to clear-cut before the Bush administration, and we have all these fires. They're not properly managing the forest. And part of the Baxter Trust is that they manage the forest. There are parts of it are supposed to be wild. Parts of it are managed wherein they cut trees. And I trust Maine to take care of our forest far more than I trust the national government. You could have another Bush get in office, and he can just go ahead and cut down some more trees. Let's do whatever he happens to feel is good. And like I said, I just trust Maine to do a better job.
Larry, is what you're talking about national park land or national forest land?
Yes, national forest land needs to be trimmed just as to cut down on fires, national forest land needs to be trimmed just like any other forest, or you run the risk of too much underbrush. And they have failed to do it in the national forest out west. And we have fire, very bad forest fires because of it. The Smokey the Bear thing went to Bush's and everybody else's head. forests need to be managed. And the state of Maine does a damn good job of managing Baxter State Park. And I just plain simple don't trust the federal government, especially if we get somebody who doesn't particularly care about the environment. I don't trust the federal government to be managing our land as well as maniacs would manage our land.
Lucas, would you like to respond to Larry?
Sure. Larry, thanks for your call. What is happening out west is a very different thing. And national forests are managed by the Department of Agriculture and have a very much conflicting mandate compared to the National Park Service. A National Park Service does not allow any timber to be harvested. And so the major fires that have happened in the west have been started by careless users for the most part, and 90% of them have been in the national forests, not the national parks. And we're fortunate in Maine to have a great Forest Service. The Maine Forest Service is fantastic, and there's actually laws on the book that require them to respond to all fires, regardless of the landowner. And so in the case of our national wildlife refuges that are in Maine, the Maine Forest Service has jurisdiction when it comes to fire management and fire suppression. So Maine is unique in that sense. And despite the fact that there are some issues in the West where forest types are very different, and obviously there's major risks of forest fires in national park or in national forests, we're talking about completely different things here in Maine.
But go ahead, Doug.
It brings a parallel thought here is though also this is a conscious decision to take however many thousand acres out of the wood basket that would supply any mills that might exist in the future. Granted, the mills, I think, are off, and that's everywhere. It's kind of a national trend. But should some industry come back that requires more fiber than we currently can produce, we will have removed however many thousand acres from our wood basket available fiber. And that's another concern, at least on my end of the world.
Yeah, I've heard that the concern is real. You know, there is some challenge there, but the land mass that we're talking about is less than 1% of the total wood basket in Maine. So we're talking about a very, very small place. And I think the main concern around a national park in Maine was this 3.2 million acre proposal that Restore put forth many years ago. And we're very much opposed to that and think that that wouldn't work either. And what we're doing is trying to add something to the local economy and not take anything away. And we feel really strongly that the timber industry is a huge important factor in the economy in the Catawba region, needs to succeed, but we need to start adding new things.
Well, let me address something else Larry talked about, and you actually touched on this in the beginning too, Lucas. We were talking about how Baxter is relatively inaccessible for many people over a certain age, people who, it's really a place designed for hikers and people who are really in pretty good physical shape. What would the national park have? Would it be like when you go to Yosemite or some of the other big national parks? Would there be a lodge there? Would there be paved paths in certain scenic areas that are handicapped accessible? Is that the kind of vision that you have?
Yeah, exactly. It would be a much more front country experience than the back country experience that you get in Baxter. There'd be a loop road to take you to scenic vistas. There would be interpretive centers. There'd be turnouts with kiosks that interpreted the landscape that you're seeing. There'd be boat launches. There'd be some improved trails that are very accessible for folks that are handicapped that couldn't walk a long ways. And that's the fortunate part about having Baxter where it is that by providing a national park and a more front country experience, then right next to it we have a more backcountry experience. So it begins to add sort of a facets to the outdoor recreation that just haven't existed in the past.
And Don, without digressing too far, I know for guides this is probably an issue. It's one thing to take somebody who's 35 years old and has grown up in the woods out on some sort of expedition, but possibly something else entirely for the vast majority of the population.
Well, actually, that's a misconception. I would say the bulk of my clients, and you're talking to a guide who guides about 130 days a year, are over 60 or have very young children. So what I do or the service I provide is I make that experience possible for people who maybe couldn't do it on their own. So that's not really a guide issue. The guide issue that there is with the park is that the federal government is very difficult to work with from a small business standpoint. The story I'll tell is I ran for 4 or 5 years a small business seminar for other guides. And because my business is 2 hours away from Acadia, I get the phone calls. In fact, a couple times a summer, someone will drive from Bar Harbor to fish with me, 2 hours one way. That's just incredible to me. I personally wouldn't waste that time, but that's another issue. So I sent a couple of young guides to Bar Harbor. I said, look, you could do what I do exactly. Copy it, go there. And none of them could establish the business because the feds were too difficult to work with. Hmm. It was just too problematic. I know there are some guide services in that area, but none that look like mine that would work on the land base.
Okay. Well, Larry, thanks so much for your call. Going now to Rob in Waldoboro. Hi, Rob. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you doing?
Good.
I was just calling. I'm like Larry. I'm a disabled veteran, and I can't get access. But I used to, 30 years ago, I worked for the Forest Service, U.S. Forest Service out west, and it was well-maintained. Now, why does it have to be a park and take the wood box away when it could be a forest and save the land and still harvest the wood and well-maintained, you know, with roads where people like me can drive into and camp and still get the wood, and the local people can make a living, the woodsmen can make a living. And I know we're not talking about a lot of land, but I think a lot of the land is there, you know. I'm not saying strip mall it or anything, but I think it shouldn't be called a park. I think the Forest Service can do a lot better, you know.
Okay, let me ask Lucas that. Lucas, have you considered that idea?
Yeah, we looked at national forests. We looked at wildlife refuges. We've looked at national parks and state parks. And what we're trying to do is build the economy of the Katahdin region. And the gold standard for economic growth around conservation is with the national parks. There's nothing that even comes close to it. And, you know, the Gifford Pinchot National Forest, I bet many people have never heard of it. It's giant, and it's bordering right by the North Cascades National Park and Mount Rainier National Park. I bet a lot of people have heard of those places. So, you know, it's a matter of trying to attract people to the region. And despite the fact that the timber industry has had advances and innovation and continues to be there, unemployment in Millinocket right now is bordering 25%. The high school is barely able to keep its doors open. The hospital is struggling to stay afloat. Small businesses are moving away. The car dealerships in Millinocket and East Millinocket are closing. So something's happening. Something's going wrong with the economy there. And I'm not going to blame any specific industry for that. But what I'm trying to do is draw business back to it. And I know that one way to do it is by an addition of a national park.
Okay, Rob, thank you for your call. Now going to Adam in Cumberland. Hi, Adam, go ahead.
Hi. I have a few comments. One is, you know, the North Woods in Maine is over 3 million acres, and Roxanne Quimby or Elliottsville Plantation owns 150,000 or whatever the exact number is. That isn't going to destroy our ability to harvest wood. And I guess the other point I'd make is it's her property. She is free to harvest or not harvest wood or do what she pleases with it. And I'm sure most of the callers support private property rights in Maine. So I'm baffled when people say that this is going to have a negative impact on an industry that's already suffering. It's not because there's not enough wood. It's because there's not enough demand for the products. And the other comment is Baxter is 200,000 acres, does not allow hunting, trapping, pets. It's a great place. They have very strict rules, as they should. This would give us an opportunity to establish our great brand, a national park, that would allow us, the people in Maine with Park Service participation, to decide whether there's hunting, trapping, pets, snowmobiles. I think those decisions have not been made, and they've already been made at Baxter. So it really would, I think, be very helpful to Maine to have this new brand here.
In fact, there is a section of Baxter Park that is open to hunting and is managed for wood. There is some cutting takes place in that park.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. Honey. It's not on the Baxter's website, that's good.
But Don, what about Adam's big point that this is Roxanne Quimby's land? She can do what she wants with it.
And absolutely. But give it to the federal government and remove it from the tax rolls of that the people of the state would then have to pick up some piece of that. How is that fair?
Well, the tax issue isn't a real one. Right now, there's the federal government pays payment in lieu of taxes for all of its federally owned land. So it's called PILT funding. And the state of Maine and Penobscot County would actually get more revenue from PILT funding if it was a park and in the federal trust than they do right now from our
Is that a law that was passed by Congress? Is that something that's set in stone?
Yes, it is. I mean, it fluctuates on percentages, but PILT funding is set in stone for sure.
Adam, thanks so much for your call. Going to Will in Dover Foxcroft. Hi, Will. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is for Mr. St. Clair, and it is, what, if any, relationship does this park proposal have with the proposed east-west corridor? And if there is no relationship, how do you think that corridor would potentially affect the viability of this park? Thank you.
So, Will, thanks for the call. This has no relationship with an east-west highway, and I really don't know enough about the highway or where it would go, and don't understand how it would affect this region. I really don't know very little about it.
Okay, well, Will, thanks for the question. We have a tweet: will this new park allow motorized watercraft or adopt Baxter's model?
It would. It would allow motorized watercraft.
I'm guessing canoes with motors and not jet skis.
Yeah, there would be probably a horsepower limitation, and all of that would be part of a management plan.
Which actually brings up one of the most fascinating questions about a park, and it's this conundrum already exists in Acadia, in that under the Great Ponds Act, the people of the state of Maine own the water in this state, and under the National Parks kind of enabling legislation, they think they own it all. It's an ongoing battle.
So how does that act out in Acadia?
In Acadia, the park has very strong feelings about what fish we should and should not be allowed to stock, what types of watercraft should be allowed on various bodies of water. And in fact, that is the state's authority in this state. It's a fascinating legal conundrum that hasn't been solved.
So does the state stock the ponds
they
in
do
Acadia?
Now. They
okay.
do.
And would that continue, Lucas, here?
Yeah, the law would stay in effect, and what we're doing now is gathering information like that from folks like Don and many others of these problems that have occurred from having a challenge between Park Service and state management, and being able to draft legislation in any way we'd like, we can account for those challenges and take care of them before this even goes on. Into the federal trust.
Don, let me see if I'm taking what you've said a step too far. Would you say to somebody in the public, if you like Acadia, you should be for this new national park, and if you don't like Acadia, you shouldn't be for it? I mean, it seems to me that your analogy is often what's happening in Acadia.
Acadia is I don't think that's fair. This is a separate proposal. It would be a very different park. But Acadia is our best example of interacting with this federal agency that Lucas is proposing would have some authority in the state. And that's why I use them as an example, because this is how they behave currently. It's likely they would behave in the same way when they move to a different place.
Okay. Go ahead.
So there are three national park units in Maine, the Appalachian Trail and the Allegash Waterway and Acadia. So it's a great example of the sort of diversity in management plans and uses and the way they affect the surrounding areas. And Acadia was created 100 years ago or almost 100 years ago. In 2016, it'll be 100 years old. So it's pretty remarkable to see what's changed and how the state's changed, how the government's changed, and how the Park Service has changed. A park that's created 100 years later will be different.
Okay. Well, when we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're going to take another short break. Still, stay with us.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Clean Bedroom Organic Bedding Showroom, helping Mainers sleep healthy since 2004, now open in Portland, also in Kittery, and at thecleanbedroom.com. By Cafe Bread Shack on Lisbon Street in Lewiston, crafting artisan breads, pastries, and sandwiches, holiday and lunch menus at thebreadshack.com. And by V-Charge Heat, providing sustainable thermal storage heating alternatives to oil, kerosene, or propane. More at goodcleanheat.com/mpbn.
Next time on Living on Earth, all kinds of people take on the challenge of climbing to the highest point in each state.
We've had the youngest person to reach a high point. Natalie Smith is 11 days old, 35 minutes. That was the state of Pennsylvania. Dave Johnson has done all 50 state high points in the winter. That's quite an accomplishment.
A Day Out with the High Pointers. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Join us for Living on Earth Sunday morning at 7 a.m.
Friday on Morning Edition, traveling to Arlington National Cemetery in a caravan from Maine.
It's fantastic. It's fascinating. It's beautiful. And for some of us, it's agonizing.
I'm Erwin Gratz, a personal memoir of Wreaths Across America and the day's news. Friday on Morning Edition from MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, should tens of thousands of acres in Maine wilderness become a national park? With me in the studio, Lucas St. Clair. He is the president of the board of Elliottsville Plantation, the company that oversees Roxanne Quimby's land. We also have with us Don Kleiner, a master Maine guide. We would like you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to John in Salem. Go ahead, John.
Yes, good afternoon. I really think this is a very noble thing to do, and I've been fortunate to travel down into southern Chile into a private preserve that was set aside by an American, because the Chileans are not far enough ahead to even develop a national park or a state park, that is. And just wondered why can't the family keep it as a gold standard in a private preserve, or roll it into Acadian or Baxter State Park as part of that? Is that possible?
Well, John, thanks for the question. It's not possible to put it into Baxter State Park. Percival Baxter left an endowment to manage the land that is now Baxter, and to add 127,000 acres to it would be too much of a liability for that endowment to actually manage. And so they don't want to acquire any more land really beyond what they have now. And we're also trying to set up a new style of recreation. You know, there is a wilderness area. There is sort of this backcountry experience that you can have in Baxter. And we're trying to create a more front country experience where there is a brand that has national recognition. And Chris Tompkins, the American that you're talking about in southern Chile, you know, she has been trying to establish national parks there, and has been working with the Argentine and Chilean government, and has created three up to this point. And those are her goals, because she knows that beyond just having, you know, a personal or a private reserve, not as many people will come to them, and it won't be recognized. And so we're trying to highlight the interior of Maine on a much larger level than we could do by ourselves with our own marketing. We're trying to adopt marketing that the National Park Service would bring.
Well, John, thank you so much for your call. Going now to Mike in Holton. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for the program, and thanks for having me on. I want to clarify something that seems to be misunderstood. I've heard this before. There are four private concessions affiliated with Acadia National Park. I own one of them. The only one that has recently changed hands, the only one that is held by the New Mexico Corporation that was mentioned a little while ago, is the Jordan Pond House and its affiliated retail shops. There are three other smaller concessions. Granted, Jordan Pond House is the biggest. I don't anticipate that there's going to be much change in terms of employee hiring and all that, even with that one. But the other three are all owned by Maine companies. Mine is an Aroostook County company. We've owned it for 5 years. And the other two companies, I believe, are Maine-owned. So to say that all of the concessions in Acadia have recently changed hands is not accurate. I wanted to clarify that. And one other thought, as somebody who deals with the bureaucracy of Acadia National Park on a regular basis, in fact, I was there yesterday for a meeting, and deals with the people there, in 5 years that I have worked with them, they, while they have their rules, and certainly a federal bureaucracy is a different animal, the people that I deal with, number one, they're all Maine citizens, and number two, they've been very, very good to deal with. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. And Mike, would you, do you have a point of view on the proposed national park?
I don't at this point. I mean, I've lived in northern Maine my whole life, and I have very strong feelings about the traditional uses and that sort of thing. I also recognize what Ms. Quimby and Mr. St. Clair have wanted to do, and kind of in a conundrum there, in that I have dealings with the national park, have had for 5 years, and I think they do bring significant benefit. Whether that outweighs what the downsides or not, I don't know at this point. I haven't decided, but I'm fascinated by the discussion. But I just wanted to make it clear that there is a benefit there, and there are main companies. I got the contract that I have, my concession, 5 years ago by putting in a bid, somewhat on a whim, and they liked my proposal and actually took it away from a Kentucky corporation. So it does go both ways.
Well, thank you so much for calling and clarifying that. Thank you, Mike, for calling. A related tweet, oh, excuse me, this is a Facebook post. Carol says, I live in Bar Harbor. During the government shutdown, Acadia was filled with hikers, walkers, bikers. Only motorized vehicles were prohibited. A national park provides an economic boom for the surrounding area. I favor this proposed park as it will only add diverse experiences with added economic opportunities for our state. So we're hearing from people on both sides of the issue, as well as those who are undecided. Going to Steve in Islesboro. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. I was listening to a comment a short while ago, a few minutes ago on the show, about tax revenues from the Quimby land, and that a private owner can't get their land out of, you know, can't not pay property tax. And there are two aspects of that. One is that with the tree growth tax break, you really don't pay a lot of taxes on tree growth area. And the second thing is that if a private landowner wants to give their land to a nonprofit foundation, it potentially becomes tax exempt. And whether it's a church or a college or a foundation that manages the park for, you know, the land as a park, it's all the same thing. And so having it belong to an entity that does the payment in lieu of taxes would be an advantage for the municipality that the land is located in.
Lucas.
Yeah, he's right. The most of northern Maine is in tree growth tax, and which it's a far reduced tax rate, and that's part of the struggle. You know, we have a giant population or a giant acreage with very small population and a lot of infrastructure to maintain. The tax base is really small. So he's right. There would be an increase in taxes, and with PILT funding, it would definitely benefit.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, for your call. Going to Marcia in Union. Hi, Marcia. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just, you know, was wondering if the Penobscot people, the First Nation people of Maine, have been included in the dialogue. Have they spoken up? What some of their opinions? That was my question.
They have. I've met with the Penobscot a handful of times and recently. And, you know, the Penobscot River is a sacred place for them, and this is the headwaters and Mount Katahdin as well. And part of what's very important, I think, to the tribe is that their cultural heritage is recognized in the development of a park there as well. And that's something that I look forward to working with them a lot on, is to be able to interpret the history. They were the first people here, and they have an incredible connection to the landscape that really – it far surpasses anybody's that's up there now. So I think it's very important, and I'm really excited about the work that we're doing with the tribe, and that will be ongoing. And the Park Service has done a great job, I think, in a lot of national parks around the country, helping to interpret the history of Native people.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Marcia. Going to Harry in Orono. Hi, Harry. Go ahead.
Hi. My concern is about Baxter Park. I'm thinking that if millions of people visit this national park and then they look over and see Mount Katahdin, they're all going to want to visit Baxter Park. And Baxter just isn't really set up for that. And I don't know what would happen. So that's my question.
That's a good one. Both respond.
I certainly have similar concerns. And I know one thing the Park Service does very well is direct people in the proper places. And the relationship that I have with Baxter State Park and the superintendent there is very close. And we're constantly talking about access points off roads that we're building, off trails that we're building, and making sure that we're not doing anything that brings increased visitation that's unwanted to Baxter. And the Park Service, you know, would have the infrastructure of having rangers and interpreters out in the field that would be able to talk about those things. And right now, it's just me and the small staff that I have that are able to do that. So in a lot of ways, we would be able to protect it more by having the Park Service and having rangers on the ground. And I love your optimism. If we could bring millions of people there, that would be amazing. But.
Well, and just in my experience, people for the most part do not travel very far from the relatively easy. I think even in Acadia, you could, in the height of the summer, go there and walk a short ways out of one of the less popular trails and be completely alone. People just don't.
So you don't see that.
They
as
don't
a big
make
concern,
that level
yeah.
of effort for the most part, I think.
Thanks, Harry, for your call. Lucas, let me ask you this. Is there any guarantee that if you donated the land, the federal government would take it?
Well, no, there's no guarantee. I mean, this would have to pass through Congress, and there are some, you know, obvious challenges with that. For example,
including our own congressional delegation.
Including our congressional delegation.
Right. And, you know, I work with the congressional delegation very closely with all of their staff, with many of their staff, and trying to come up with something that they know is supported by the Katahdin region. And there's no way that our congressional delegation is going to get out in front of the people of Maine. You know, they have to stay aligned with their constituents. And some of the congressional delegation staff have come up to the Katahdin region, spent time with me on the ground, spent time with me with business owners in the region, and are beginning to see that there's a change happening. But there's a lot of work still to be done. And we're hoping that there's a partnership that's formed between our congressional delegation, stakeholders in the region, interest groups across Maine, that we all collectively together can draft this legislation that makes sense for this broad group of people. And then it'll be much more likely to actually pass because there'll be complete buy-in as opposed to just me saying, all right, this is what it's going to be like. Here you go. Run with it.
And Don, do you agree that there's a bit of a shift in the region?
There is definitely a shift. And again, to Lucas's credit, the vision he just put forward, that would be perfect in my world. I mean, that we would all agree on something and say this ought to be. We're not to that point yet. But again, I really appreciate being invited into the conversation and having the opportunity. Pretty clearly, he and I still disagree, but we're able to have this conversation. And I don't know that I'll ever get to the place where I think, oh, yeah, the national park is the answer. But I certainly appreciate being able to have the conversation.
And Lucas, let me ask you this. What is your timeline? I know originally it was 2016, the 100th anniversary of the Park Service. That seems unlikely at this point. How long are you going to fight this fight?
Well, that's a good question. It's probably the question I get asked the most.
He's and, a young man.
Yeah.
he is.
Right. My response is often, I'm 35 years old. I'll work on this for a long time. And got a 2.5-year-old daughter. She can take over. I mean, I don't foresee it going that long, but it's hard to put a time frame on it when it's, you know, working with the hearts and minds of people in a small community in rural Maine that change slowly. And there needs to be sets of values that need to be shared and relationships built and trust built. And then hopefully together we can collectively move forward. And not until then. And this is unique. It's not like there's going to be a Tuesday in November where everyone goes to the ballot box and votes for or against this. It'll just sort of morph into something over time. But, you know, I don't see it also – don't see it happening in the next year or two, but I also don't see it taking
forever.
Okay. Well, I think with that, we're out of time. I really appreciate you both being here. What an interesting conversation, and I'm sure one that we'll continue to have. We've been having for a decade now in Maine. Lucas St. Clair, president of the board of Elliottsville Plantation Incorporated, the company that oversees Roxanne Quimby's lands in Maine. Don Kleiner is a master Maine guide and executive director of the Maine Guide, a professional guide association. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board, and our volunteer, Lucas Randall Owens, answered your calls. We had help from the MPBN web team as well. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.